Well, I'm not sure a spoonful of sugar will make the medicine go down, but I'm also sure aspartame won't do it as well. Aspartame, as a matter of fact, is a sugar substitute, frequently used in products like diet soda, some foods, even medicines. Unlike sugar, aspartame is a non-carbohydrate-based product, so it contains virtually no calories. Aspartame is approximately 180 times sweeter than sugar. The product is a result of an accidental discovery in 1965 by James Slater, who was a chemist working for G.D. Searle, who was working on a drug to prevent ulcers. When he made aspartame from aspartic acid and another substance, he noticed its sweet taste. The rest is history. Tonight we talk about aspartame, its potential dangers, why it's on the market, and how do you get it off. In a moment, Dr. Betty Martini joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Throughout the night, we'll have a number of guests for you coming in each half hour. Dr. Betty Martini will be with us for the entire evening. She's the founder of the Global Volunteer Force Mission Possible International, which educates the public on aspartame and warnings of its dangers. She's been doing this for 14 years with operations in most states and over 30 countries of the world. She works with the world experts who write the reports that you'll find on her web pages that are linked up now at coasttocoastam.com, spending 22 years in the medical field before this and created the first health delivery system in the United States. Already, she's got an effort underway with a group, the mission, a possible group in Hawaii, a non-for-profit organization, which is aimed at eliminating the use of aspartame in beverage, food, and pharmaceutical products. They have begun mobilizing their campaign. Last year, the group got an anti-aspartame bill introduced in both the Hawaii State Senate and House of Representatives. They didn't go anywhere. This year, the group will reach for the same goal of getting the bill passed, which would eliminate the use of the ingredient in the state. Here she is, Dr. Betty Martini. Hey, Betty, how are you? Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, George, and good morning, as it is here in Atlanta. So happy to be back on the show.
I decided tonight to put my neck in the noose and do a complete show on this substance and go right toward big business this time, Betty, but I think it's very important.
I do, too, and in fact, I've been getting a lot of emails already from a lot of sick people, and it's such a great opportunity to get them well and let them know the actual facts, because one of the worst things about this whole situation is people think that it's an additive, you know, and it's just masquerading as an additive, whereas it's an addictive, excito-neurotoxic carcinogenic drug, and it's interacting with older drugs, and so they... we have a global epidemic. People are sick everywhere, no matter where you lecture, no matter where you travel. You run into people that can't get well until they find out what the culprit is.
I have noticed, Betty, that there are a number of studies that are warning of the dangers of aspartame. And then there are some studies out there that say that it hasn't been proven, that it in small quantities doesn't hurt human beings. How do we get such varying different studies?
Well, you're going to hear from Dr. Walton later on, and he's the one that did for 60 Minutes the research on that, and he showed that 92% of all independent scientific peer-reviewed studies showed the problems that it caused. And that if you eliminate six that the FDA had something to do with, you're talking about 100%. And it's impossible to do a study on aspartame, which is a poison, and have it show safety. And that's the reason that the FDA originally tried to have Searle, the original manufacturer, indicted for fraud. And the only reason they didn't is that both U.S. prosecutors, Sam Skinner and William Conlon, hired on with the defense team, and the statute of limitations expired. But the Breslau report that we have on web shows that they got caught, and they were removing brain tumors from rats and putting them back in the study, and the rats would die, and they would resurrect them on paper. So everything was documented. They simply couldn't get aspartame to show safety. In fact, Dr. Walton himself decided to do a study, and the institution had to stop it. The administrator was in the study, and he had a retinal detachment and has lost vision in one eye. So every time there is an attempt to do, you know, human studies, you get all these problems, and they're documented. So what you have to do is look and see if the manufacturer was the one who funded it and controlled it, or whether it was independent, and that's how you know the difference.
We will be telling you how aspartame got approved by the FDA in an incredible story that will just rock your world, and you'll realize how big business gets things done when they need to. Aspartame seems to be in all kinds of ingredients now these days, Betty. How big is the business? I mean, how many dollars is this thing bringing in for companies?
Well, it's a billion-dollar business, and the reason is that it's addictive. And it's interesting that just recently there was an article about Coke going back. They had put Splenda in some of their products, and that they were going back to aspartame. And I knew that that would happen. One of the reasons we need to get it banned is because that people using, like Diet Coke, they crave it. And so they're so highly addicted that when you change the ingredient, they don't use it anymore, and they don't want to lose the money. And it's a cash cow because of that. And the reason is there is free methyl alcohol in it, which causes chronic methanol poisoning. This affects the dopamine system of the brain and causes the addiction. And sometimes you could put a stack of medical records, the FDA report, the congressional record in front of people that are addicted, and it doesn't make any difference. Interestingly, I was talking to Dr. Bill Deagle about it one time, and he said, well, he says it affects the frontal cells, and it's just like talking to somebody with a lobotomy. Even though they know all the dangers, that it's a global epidemic, that they can go blind, get MS, lupus, Alzheimer's, all these different things, they're too addicted to give it up. The reason that we now have started aspartame detox centers to try to help the people.
Betty, we've got a lot of people who listen to this program from all walks of life and all age brackets. Specifically right now, I want to ask you a question, and I want you to address the younger people who are listening to this program right now. And you know, they're from 25 to 28. I mean, they're in a very young bracket where they're probably saying right now, come on, George, I'm not sick. Come on, why are we talking about this stuff? I want you to address that question to them.
Well, because it's slow and subtle, and people do not, they think that they're just getting older, and they don't realize these are the symptoms of aspartame. For instance, the FDA lists 92 symptoms. Number one is headache. Then they get dizziness, change in mood quality, abdominal pain, change in vision. And these are, but they don't associate them with aspartame, which is why we tell them, take the 60-day no aspartame test and see for yourself. And then all of a sudden their headaches disappear and their joint pain disappears and their insomnia disappears. And they don't realize that. But what I tell young people is, what is so concerned is that aspartame, first of all, is an endocrine disrupting agent. So many people sipping diet pop who may want to go get pregnant, they can't because it stimulates prolactin and changes the menses and causes infertility. Then they get off of it and get pregnant, and it's an abortifacient, and they could lose the baby. And if the baby survives, they can have birth defects, and it can be building up in their system while they're young. And so many people have told me, for instance, you know, they grew up, they wanted to get married and have families, and they never were able to have children, or they lost their children. And it's even though it's slow and subtle, nobody gets away with aspartame. The worst of it is, for instance, I flew to Barcelona and talked to Dr. Alemany, who did the CROCO study, which shows that the formaldehyde converted from the free methyl alcohol embalms living tissue and damages DNA. When you damage DNA, you can destroy humanity. In Dr. Roberts' medical text, he has a page on Priam bombing. And he looked at me and he said, Betty, this can kill 200 million people.
Jeez.
I said, well, it already has. And some people have lost as many as 8 babies because of the miscarriages from it. You know, they tell women don't use alcohol. Well, what do you think's in aspartame? But wood alcohol that they're using while they're pregnant, and they don't even have the decency to put a warning on there. And as far as young people are concerned, also, when they're in school, they can't think, they have memory loss, it reduces IQ. In fact, I was so concerned about the behavioral problems and psychiatric problems that it is causing kids, because our kids today are medicated instead of educated, that I asked all the experts to write new reports on how it destroys the brains of our children. And I put that in a actually Don Harkins helped us with this. They were going to put out a brochure, put it in one Microsoft document called Report for Schools. And last year for Aspartame Awareness Weekend, we emailed that to schools, Board of Educations all over the world to try to get them to take it out of the schools to prevent, you know, what's happening to the kids.
What happened, Betty, that got you on this bandwagon so many years ago?
Well, actually, George, I was trying to retire. Actually, my husband had, he had his own business, and he said, now I'm going to show you the world. And about that time, he had a friend who appeared to be dying. He had Parkinson's. And you'd get close to him, and his arms and legs would kick out. Think of Michael Fox. And a physician told me at the time, he said, did you know that aspartame was a deadly poison? I said, well, I heard about it. So I asked to be referred to the world expert, Dr. H.J. Roberts. That's how I met him. And he said he's probably drinking a Diet Coke and taking his L-Dopa, and it's interacting. I said, you mean to tell me that this product called an additive interacts with drugs? He said, yes, you better get him off of it right away. It actually can precipitate Parkinson's. And as soon as I did, about 4 days later, all his reactions stopped, because that's exactly what he was doing. And I read Dr. Roberts' first book and found out, you know, that it precipitates and mimics MS and seizures. And I'd get people off of it. They'd walk out of wheelchairs. Their seizures would stop. And so we're religious people, we're witnesses, and my husband said, well, you know, I'll give you my retirement funds because we can't have this knowledge and let people who have no earthly idea it's a poison, we don't have the billions to fight these criminals. And so I used his return instead of seeing the world, we've been trying to save it, and set up this global volunteer force, which is now in 39 nations, with everybody working free just to educate the public and to save lives and to try to get it banned.
Is it true that aspartame is responsible for 75% of the complaints that the FDA gets?
Oh, yes, or more. And they admitted that themselves. In fact, in congressional hearings, and we've put them on mpwhi.com, both congressional hearings, it was admitted that the FDA was getting so many complaints that they were sending the victims to the AIDS hotline because they couldn't take all these complaints. And that's why there were congressional hearings and testimony of people, I mean, pilots having seizures. There is, and also the scientists were speaking out. Dr. Roberts was there, and there was actually three. And the FDA themselves, the FDA toxicologist, testified against the FDA. And I can quote it from, you know, by heart, where Dr. Adrian Gross said, you know, this violates the Delaney Amendment, which says you can't put anything in food that you know will cause cancer. And therefore, the FDA should not have been able to set an allowable dose. And if the FDA violates its own law, who is left to protect the public?
Absolutely. Betty, I touched briefly on the accidental discovery of aspartame in 1965 by the chemist at G.D. Searle. Tell us exactly, what is this stuff, aspartame?
Well, first of all, it has three components: aspartic acid, which is an excitotoxin, a product that literally stimulates the neurons of the brain to death. Dr. John Oney, who tried to prevent its approval, founded the neuroscience excitotoxicity, and Dr. Russell Blaylock wrote the book on it. And then it is, it's got 50% phenylalanine, which is a neurotoxin when it's isolated, and it floods the brain, lowers the seizure threshold, and depletes serotonin, which is causing all these psychiatric behavioral problems. It is bound by a methyl ester, which is immediately becomes methanol and then converts to formaldehyde and formic acid. Then the molecule breaks down to diketokiprazine, which is a brain tumor agent, so that the whole molecule is literally poison. And it is, Dr. Deagle actually saw it being made. It is genetically engineered on E. coli bacteria. It's a toxic sludge. I think that if anybody could see these vats of this genetically engineered sludge before it's pressed into a white powder, nobody would ever touch it. So there's nothing safe about it, and the propaganda is absurd. They'll tell you this is the building blocks of life, these amino acids. But, you know, when God makes it, there are 20 proteins in, there are 20 amino acids in protein, and they are in balance. And so they don't cause this problem. But when they're isolated, they do. And they'll tell you there's more methanol in oranges than there is in aspartame. But what they don't tell you is in oranges, it is accompanied by ethanol, which is, the antidote to methanol toxicity, and takes it out of the body. It is also bound in nature, and whereas in aspartame, it is free. It's bound to pectin in nature. So when you write the FDA and tell them this is free methyl alcohol, they won't even answer you, even if you send the letter certified mail. Dr. Roberts has tried that for years. So, in fact, according to The Ecologist, which is a very prestigious magazine, that came out in 2005 and told the whole story, and a 17-page cover story, it starts out by saying that aspartame was actually listed with the Pentagon in an inventory of prospective biochemical warfare weapons submitted to Congress.
It's all about the money. Is saccharin in the same category as aspartame?
Not really. I wouldn't want to put it in my mouth simply because it's a coal tar product. It's a chemical. But it's been on the market 100 years, so it's, you know, it's not going to do what aspartame is doing. But, you know, on top of everything else, now they've got Splenda, which is a chlorocarbon poison, liberates free chlorine. And, you know, they and fortunately, just like sugar, is made a safe sweetener, so there is something out there for people to take that's safe. And that's what we're doing this weekend, Aspartame Awareness Weekend, as we've written a flyer to try to get these poisons off restaurant tables. And so there's, you know, even your sugar alcohols, if you use too much of it, you get cramps and you get bloating and diarrhea. And so, and people are using them because they think, oh, well, we've got this epidemic of obesity and I want to lose weight. But aspartame is low-cal weight gain.
Absolutely. Betty, James Turner is going to join us in just a moment, a consumer affairs consultant. He will tell us the incredible story of how aspartame got approved by the FDA. Joining us now is James Turner, serving as a consumer affairs consultant to Governor John Gilligan of Ohio, special counsel to the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs, and the Government Operations Subcommittee on Government Research. James wrote the book, The Chemical Feast, the Nader Report on Food Protection at the Food and Drug Administration, the book being hailed by Time Magazine. Here he is with Betty Martini. Hello, James. How are you, sir?
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you with us here as well. And Betty, you jump in anytime, okay?
Okay. I think Jim knows the story so well. He was there. You're going to enjoy this.
This is an incredible story, James, of how how things get done by big business. 1965, the chemist accidentally comes up with aspartame, and all of a sudden, what happens? Who decides, let's take it to market, we can make money with this, and then what's the process?
Well, it was an ulcer drug, and the guy working on it put his finger in it, put it in his mouth, which chemists do, and he said, my gosh, it's sweet. And the company said, we can make more selling this to millions of people a little bit at a time than we can by selling it as a drug. And so off they went and started to do things that were quite strange. So, for example, Dr. John Olney at Washington University did some studies in 1970 and showed that the chemical they were working with caused actual holes in the brains of mice, little small microscopic holes. And he had the hypothesis that this might be the kind of thing that causes mental retardation. He got the people from the company, it was Cyril at that time, to come down and repeat the experiments. They did. Their person did the experiments, repeated them, went back to the company and said, look, this stuff may be a serious problem. And interestingly enough, she disappeared from science from then on. Never heard from her again. She was gone. They continued for the next decade to do that. Those kinds of things. Dr. Olney and I objected to the FDA's approval of NutraSweet. It was called aspartame at the time. We asked for and got a public hearing. I actually met with the Cyril folks before the FDA ruling in 1974, and I pointed out that these holes in the brain were going to make it very hard to get approval. They said they would get approval. I said they would never reach the market. And interestingly enough, the FDA approved it and then stayed the approval because they found so many problems in the laboratories of Cyril. They had animals that were alive at the beginning of the experiment, died in the middle of the experiment, and were alive at the end of the experiment. There's no evidence at all in the record that can be relied upon that establishes any safety. This then went on to the point where the Public Board of Inquiry, to have the hearing that we'd asked for, was held in 1980. And they ruled that the NutraSweet product, the aspartame, should not be marketed because of the possibility that it would cause brain tumors.
Jeez.
The animal study showed brain tumors. At that point, it was 1 month before Ronald Reagan was elected president. That was in October of 1980. November of 1980, Reagan was elected president. And then Donald Rumsfeld was on the transition team for Reagan, and he was the president of the Cyril Company. And he held a meeting in January of 1981 saying to all of his Cyril folks that he was going to call in all his chips in Washington and get NutraSweet approved by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
The new FDA commissioner, who had been a contract physician at the Department of Defense when Rumsfeld was Defense Secretary, came to the FDA, and the first act he did was to approve NutraSweet for aspartame for dry foods, and then 2 years later, his last act under his administration was to approve it for diet sodas.
And didn't he, James? Wasn't it? It was losing in the FDA by a 3-2 vote, and the new commissioner Arthur Hayes Hull brings in another person, so the vote gets tied, and then he breaks the vote. With his own vote, did that happen like that?
Well, that's one way of looking at it, but there's an even more interesting way of looking at it, and that is that there ultimately ended being six people on the panel, and they did, in fact, three of them said they would support approval, and three of them said they would not support approval. Interestingly enough, it was unanimous that the three cancer experts said they would not approve the NutraSweet. The other three didn't supported the Public Board of Inquiry's notion that they could not prove that the fetal ketonuria problem that is recognized by everyone was a generalized population problem. Basically, what happened is all six of these people supported the Public Board of Inquiry's ruling. The Public Board of Inquiry said, okay, on this problem of brain damage, we don't see enough evidence to raise a serious problem on the brain damage.
Except for Hall.
On cancer, we see it, we're concerned, we're going to ban it. And that was a ban. He had to overturn that ban in order to make it work, and he did exactly what you said. He read the ruling to be 3-4, 3 against. I'll break the tie, and we'll let it out.
And then
in fact, it was unanimous that the thing causes cancer among the cancer, you know, that could cause cancer among the cancer experts.
And then what happened to him, the FDA commissioner? Didn't he leave the FDA under some allegations?
He left the FDA under a cloud because he had been riding in the General Foods airplane improperly. In fact, General Foods was one of the original sponsors of aspartame, and then they dropped back because there were some serious problems in the early studies, and Cyril then ended up taking the brunt of it. But he was disciplined for riding in the General Foods plane. When I say disciplined, basically they asked him to resign before they went into a serious
hearing.
Jim,
would you tell them about the executive order, how far they had to go?
Well, before we do that, let's just catch up with this one point that Hayes went on to become the senior medical advisor to Burson Marsteller, the company that was the Cyril company's
PR company.
Strategist, the PR company.
Exactly.
and we talked to them about that, and we said, you know, how can you do this? And they said to us, it was really amazing, they said, all the money that he's paid comes from something other than Cyril, because we sequestered the Cyril money so he doesn't get paid by the Cyril money. I mean, now this is like Alice in Wonderland to have that sort of a...
Yeah, it's like he was taken care of, and they tucked him away somewhere.
And then he has never been willing, able, or agreed to any kind of interview subsequent to have that action.
Is he at the public relations company now? Is he still around?
He was only a consultant to the public relations company. That was a way of funneling money to him. No, he's back on a medical school faculty, I believe, up in New York. But Betty also just raised an interesting point, and that is that remember that the Public Board of Inquiry had ruled in October of 1980 that this stuff could not be marketed. That's a final ruling, and it is determinative of the situation unless the FDA commissioner overturns it. Well, the day that Reagan was sworn in, or the day after Reagan was sworn in, according to Jerry Goyen, who was the FDA commissioner at the time, he received a direction, an order. It was actually an executive order telling him that he was not able to make any decisions at that point, and they were going to replace him. It took about 6 weeks to replace him.
And wasn't Rumsfeld, who was the CEO of G.D. Searle, on that team, that transition team, that was going to pick the new FDA commissioner?
Absolutely he was. And Senator Metzenbaum did a thorough investigation. They cannot find out who proposed Arthur Hall Hayes for FDA commissioner. He just showed up out of nowhere. What we do know is that he was a contract physician at the Defense Department when Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense. He was doing a couple of studies. And, in fact, part of the reason that he was asked to leave the FDA was that there was a study done by the Army Inspector General that he had exposed recruits to pharmaceutical products improperly. Interestingly enough, at the time he was having his NutraSweet problems at FDA, or taking his actions, he was also proposing a significant relaxation in human testing at FDA. Basically, he was there to do somebody else's business, and when it got too hot for him, he was taken away, you know, taken out, and given a nice sinecure to just keep his mouth shut and stay out of the line.
Isn't it interesting how Rumsfeld's name, Jim, pops up and the G.D. Searle case with aspartame, with the Iraq War, with everything that just seems to have a cloud, there he is.
My sense, he actually arranged to have a meeting with me, which I did. I spent a few hours with him.
What'd you think of him, personally?
Well, I was, I proposed, I did not think very much of him at the end of this meeting. It was not the end of the meeting, but 6 months later. It was about a six-month process. We had this meeting, and I said, look, we've got all this science that shows problems. You've got science that you claim doesn't show problems. Why don't we just together come up with a committee that we can agree on of scientists and have them look at all the data, your data, our data, everybody's data, and see what the data says. And he had some people on his staff that were proposing that, and he had one guy who was a science advisor who was hysterical in this meeting about not allowing that to happen. Rumsfeld maintained himself in a balanced way in this meeting, but then over the next 6 months, gradually they decided not to do the proposal that I made, not to do any looking at the data, but rather to treat the whole thing as a legal political battle. And they went ahead and fought it through legally and politically with lobbyists and so forth, and were able to basically use Rumsfeld's tools to get the thing through.
How do these people sleep, Jim?
Well, I don't think Rumsfeld has much empathy for anyone outside of his own very narrow circle. He does not value the lives of other people particularly. I don't think he even understands that's a part of what the deal is. His notion is that he was hired to turn Cyril around. It was about to go out of business.
And make money for stockholders.
And for himself. He got a $12 million bonus for getting this thing through the FDA, a personal $12 million bonus.
Just on this deal.
Just on this deal. And that's chicken feed in today's world, but back in 1985,
that's a lot of money.
A nice bit of change.
And I know some people who could live well on that, let me tell you.
Yeah, but probably not the people in Rumsfeld's class. They need more than that. But it's a shocking story to watch because, we've had, thousands of people call us, talk to them. We've had meetings with them. I mean, these people whose lives have been, it's essentially ruined, from people who, one woman early on was an artist who lost the sight in one eye and basically lost her career as an artist. But you talk to these people and you realize, and basically the way she found out about the harm was that her doctor couldn't understand, her eye doctor couldn't understand why she was having these vision problems. And he went through everything in her diet, in her home cleaning, and products, and everything that was she was coming in contact with, and it was NutraSweet aspartame that had methyl alcohol in it. Methyl alcohol is known to cause blindness.
Doesn't it also break down at a certain temperature and turns into formaldehyde?
That's exactly right. It does.
Isn't that embalming fluid?
That is. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. And it was interesting because early on, even the Soft Drink Association made noises about opposing NutraSweet because of that fact. If it gets over 80 degrees, about 80 degrees, it breaks down. And the argument that the company Cyril made to the FDA was, yes, but as it breaks down, its flavor is so bad that nobody would actually drink it. That's a cynical argument in and of itself, but also it's not necessarily true because it starts breaking down and the flavor doesn't actually get bad until after it's pretty well broken down.
Now, how did these brilliant marketeers then, how did they take this product that had no sales, that got approved by the FDA through a very cloudy way, how did they begin to market it to the soda companies and the other companies?
Well, there's a very interesting story there. There were in 1980, it was approved in 1981 for dry foods, and there began to be complaints, and there were about 600 complaints at FDA. It was only marketed in Arizona at that point as a test market, and they got about 600 complaints, and they were sent to the CDC to be evaluated. And the CDC made a very interesting statement. They said, we're looking at people who have complained about NutraSweet consumption. They consume NutraSweet and they have problems. We cannot tell you whether the NutraSweet caused those problems or not because everybody ate it. So we don't have a double blind situation. But we will evaluate what we have here. And what they found was that about 25 to 30% of the female users had problems like seizures and headaches and dizziness and so forth. And they would, the problems would go away when they stopped NutraSweet, and then when they took NutraSweet back on, the problems would come back. So they made some very interesting statements about the problems. Interestingly enough, after a lot of struggle and push and pull, that study was finally released by the FDA. We had worked hard to get it out. And fascinatingly enough, Pepsi-Cola, the day that study was released, Pepsi-Cola had an international, worldwide, huge blowout series of press conferences about how they were going to add NutraSweet to Pepsi-Cola. They just completely blew the story of its problems off out of the news media. Now, the important point there is that the head of Pepsi-Cola, Don Kendall, was one of the key advisors to the White House at the time, you know, informal kitchen cabinet type advisor.
Right.
At the time that Rumsfeld was working in the White House. And in fact, Rumsfeld and Kendall had a very close personal relationship. So here you see the Old Boys Network working very, very hard, and they blasted this thing out through that that particular press briefing. It was a huge press briefing worldwide. In addition to that, they did almost simultaneously to that, a little bit before, but close to it, or maybe it was actually a little bit after, I think. They sent just about every household in America got a little bubble gum wrap, gumballs sent to them with NutraSweet in it as a huge PR campaign. It's important to note that when Rumsfeld went to Cyril, he took three political operatives with him, people who were politicians, and those politicians. They did one thing which was really interesting, and that is that they, for the first time, they branded a.
By the way, we asked for a statement from various companies involved in aspartame, and nobody answered.
And it should be noted that there was a protest by the National Soft Drink Association before all this happened. So all of a sudden. They changed their mind after protesting. That's in the congressional record.
Well, the interesting thing there is that when they protested, which was in the early 70s, 73, 74.
And also, didn't they ask the FDA in 83 to delay approval of aspartame? The National Soft Drink Association went to the FDA and said, don't put it in yet because we want further testing. So somebody got
it. They actually approved it. It was actually approved in 81. And before that, the soft drink people had said, look, I think we're going to have some problems here. And what's interesting is that the influence, the heavy influence in the Soft Drink Association at the time there was the objections was Coca-Cola. But then the balance of power kind of shifted to Pepsi-Cola in the Soft Drink Association, and basically Pepsi signed on as the great promoter of NutraSweet. Then what happened is the deal that Cyril ran was so tough that it was virtually impossible to put a diet soda on the market without NutraSweet in it. And they basically bought, you might have been able to have a competition between saccharin and NutraSweet, except that they created a deal where the product they put in was part saccharin and part NutraSweet, so that they got their product in without having a direct competition. Then they put heavy duties on the cost of this sweetener, and it was there were many companies that were very resistant and unhappy. But ultimately, they were all whipped into shape by the market power that Rumsfeld was able to create.
Well, it's just amazing, Jim, how they can get a product like this to market and push for it. And use the Good Old Boy Network to do it. In a moment, we'll be joined with Dr. Betty Martini and Stephen Fox, who's very active in consumer protection. Thank you, Jim Turner. We'll be back in a moment. Wow. The Douglas Report, which is a health report, says that aspartame is one of the most dangerous substances ever added to food. In a moment, another guest, Stephen Fox, joins us along with Dr. Betty Martini on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Stephen Fox is very active in New Mexico legislative and consumer protection politics, trying to get the FDA to rescind its approval for the sweetener aspartame. He's with us along with Betty Martini. Hey, Stephen, how are you, sir?
Oh, splendid. Thank you for having me as a guest. I think with programs like yours, we could actually, put the opposite of dumbing down the educate the American public into some really strong consumer protection action, like getting aspartame off the market. I mean, and so I appreciate very much being here.
Stephen, is that doable, do you think, getting it off the market?
Well, to be honest with you, James Turner could explain, has explained, I think, already on your program how he basically forced Nixon to give a presidential order to take it off, to take cyclamates off the market. So yes, I think it's possible. And I mean, on a state by state level, it may be impossible with the kind of corporate logic that rules through lobbyists, and that they're really an infernal bunch. They're like whores, And so last year, I gave up on New Mexico. I ran into the same people, and they kept turning on the steam and saying that it was all internet junk science and so on and so on. And I just concentrated on Hawaii and made, I think, tremendous inroads over there with the ban bill, the bill to ban aspartame. And then when that became impossible due to the same lobbyists, we got a resolution, a powerful resolution. Betty and I wrote it. Which basically it's a very genteel, a very different approach rather than saying we have to ban it. It's to say, the state of Hawaii is asking the FDA to voluntarily rescind it. And here are the 40 years of reasons why. And I think we're going to do that same resolution in New Mexico and Hawaii this year. And I hope some more states, it's a different approach, but it's ultimately, I think, perhaps more convincing.
I am so convinced, Stephen, and you, Betty, I want to address this to you, that people are becoming sick, getting diabetes, type 2, from so many things that have been put in their food. And, whether this substance or not contributes to it, and you have research that shows that it does, that it's harmful, there's no question that what we're putting in food and drink, We're killing people. We're hurting people.
Well, as far as diabetes is concerned, now Dr. H.J. Roberts, who wrote the medical text, is a diabetic specialist, and he says it not only precipitates diabetes, but it simulates and aggravates diabetic retinopathy and neuropathy. It destroys the optic nerve. It causes diabetics to go into convulsions. It interacts with insulin, and the free methyl alcohol is causing the diabetics to lose limbs. So if you want to kill a diabetic, aspartame will do it, and it's pushed on them. And in 2004, the American Diabetes Association had a suit filed against them for racketeering because of it. And even though they got out of it, the point is that the professional organizations are funded, by industry to defend and to push these products. And this is why it makes it so difficult for us.
Stephen, what about the FDA? I mean, they're supposed to protect us. They're supposed to watch. It seems like they do a good job when they run around trying to find the source of a salmonella outbreak that they find in Mexico, and they blame jalapeno peppers, though they haven't ruled out tomatoes. So there seem to be some hard people working, good workers within the FDA. But politically, isn't that a different story?
They are very good people at the lower levels. Many of the people that fought aspartame being approved from 1966 to 1981, those were very good people. But it slipped into a whole new realm of political whoredom with Donald Rumsfeld. And, when he forced the approval of this, he really has killed a lot more people than those, Serbian guy or Croatian guys being tried for genocide in Serbia.
Yeah.
When you add it up, I mean, maiming people and so on and so on. My only hope and prayer, and what I work for diligently every day is a new FDA commissioner, not this corporate slug we have now, Dr. Von Eschenbach, because he's wallowing in corporate pleasantries. And I had 21 members of the New Mexico legislature. That's almost a fifth of the whole legislature. sign a letter to him and to President Bush and to the Secretary of Health, Leavitt, asking them to take aspartame off the market. And he did answer. You know, Bush never answered, but von Eschenbach, you know, just it's just corporate pleasantries. You know, it's like the sweet, charming letter that you want to get back from someone committing genocide.
Can anybody try to get, as they did in the tobacco suits, documents, and in some cases documents that we get from, like, Vioxx?
Absolutely.
Like,
if one attorney general spearheaded such a thing, and it would really take shape very quickly.
There could be some criminal charges here, Stephen.
Yes, and you know, until we there should be criminal charges, and there absolutely should be. And Arthur Hull Hayes, and Rumsfeld, and Samuel Skinner, they should all be there. All old, very old men now, but you know, that's okay. And you know, I want to see a new FDA commissioner entirely, and I personally like. I think Dr. Dean, Howard Dean, would be great. I personally gave him in 2003 a copy of Blaylock's book and inscribed to him personally. And I know he read it. I've discussed it with him. And, you know, it's a whole difference between a consumer protection FDA and a corporate-serving FDA. As long as you have the kind of guys we have now, you know, they're all following in the footsteps of Arthur Hull Hayes, who was given the job by Rumsfeld as a buddy deal, you know, to approve aspartame in exchange for the job and you know, so Rummy could make $15 million.
Jeez. I mean, weren't some of the attorneys, for example, who not specifically in this case, though I know, Betty, you mentioned one on a prosecutor, but weren't some of the attorneys who have worked for the FDA who were looking at pharmaceutical drugs, the drug companies trying to get them approved through the FDA, didn't they end up as attorneys for the corporations in some cases?
Oh, and the regulators themselves, the scientists end up, it's a revolving door, and it's pathetic. And this is one of the reasons that the American health has declined. And you know what? We're dragging down the rest of the world, too, because so many nations in Africa and Europe and South America, Central America, look to the FDA as this pristine example of the highest possible standards. What I call nonsense. It's just total BS.
What's it all about, Stephen? Is it all about money?
Yeah, and it may be there may be genocidal attributes, you know, that go beyond just money. There may be, I don't know. I often, it's a very deep philosophical question, but of course, when corporations only want to please their you know, bottom line, they hire lobbyists to come out and kill such things. Like they, you know, they either have a whispering campaign like they did in Hawaii that, you know, they got to some of the very key people. We had bills that were scheduled that, like the resolution was scheduled in the Senate Health Committee, and all of a sudden the Senate Health Committee chairman, who signed the resolution as a co-sponsor, mind you, all of a sudden said, you know, I wonder whether this is internet junk science and you know, whether all your rationale that is listed in the Hawaii Senate resolution is just nonsense. And anyway,
so
the listeners can read that, by the way. May I just say this, that it's on the Hawaii legislature website, a Senate Concurrent Resolution 191. And it, you could take out Hawaii and put in Missouri in that language and introduce it in the Missouri legislature. And I want to encourage people to do that. So I'm grateful for your program.
All right. Go ahead, Betty.
Okay. Also, the same resolution has been given to an organization in South Africa, the Phoenix Environmental Institute, which we sort of teamed up with, and they presented it to the South Africa Parliament. And now they have requested that we have it, because we have so many operations around the world, having it translated into different languages so we can go about it on a global basis. And I'd also like to mention, since James Turner was on, that what you've heard tonight is in a movie called Sweet Misery, A Poison World, where you can hear the whole thing and all the experts that are in there.
We used that, pardon me.
Go ahead, Steve.
We used that movie as convincing evidence for getting legislators on our side, and once they saw it, it was absolutely irrevocable. They all knew. Yeah, and the senator in Hawaii that sponsored the resolution is going to do it again next year. Her name is Suzanne Chun Oakland, and then the New Mexico senator Jerry Ortiz Pino is going to do it again as well. And we another couple of legislators in other states. If you're a legislator and you're listening, or if you have ties to one, get them to do this, because it's a very elegant and very powerful resolution. Once it's even published on a website, on a legislature website, it becomes a very powerful document. And, three or four states doing this at once is going to get the attention of a new FDA commissioner. And let's hope it's, somebody that cares about people rather than corporations. I like Howard Dean personally, but...
Well, and would he initiate, the beginning of trying to get this banned?
Well, he certainly could, and so could the new president. I mean, don't forget, the one good thing that Nixon did many years ago was simply give a presidential order to get cyclamates off the market.
And it was done.
Yeah, done deal, and what happened with aspartame was the opposite of that. The president ordered the FDA commissioner to not do anything until the new guy could take charge, and aspartame was at the heart of it. And this isn't some nonsense conspiracy theory. This is all provable and dates and documented.
So just to show you that it is documented, I talked to Linda Hart, who was the wife of Jerry Goyen, who was the FDA commissioner, and she said that someone on the Reagan transition team called them up at 3 a.m. in the morning and fired him, and said that Rumsfeld said Goyen had to go because he would have signed the revoke petition into law.
Oh,
and I had her give me an affidavit, and we have it on mpwhi.com. You can actually read the letter of the FDA commissioner. And I've done this to document everything. I'd also like to mention another problem that we had in New Mexico and Hawaii, because I lectured before the Senate and the House. As we got into the Senate, and half of them are sitting there in front of us addicted and drinking Diet Coke. And Dr. Stoller from New Mexico testified with me, and he finally got up in front of them, and he says, "With you senators, drinking Diet Coke here in front of us, we're not going to get very far, but at least have some mercy on the children." And so then in Hawaii, there was a senator that didn't set up the resolution who was drinking Diet Coke, and that was the reason he would not do that.
I don't think these people, Betty, care about the children.
I know.
You're right.
And that,
they make a good game. That's the number one thing for legislators to make a semblance of doing, which is how much they care about the children in the state, but they really don't. You're absolutely right.
And I'll tell you, when I was in New Zealand, horrors of all horrors, that the health minister actually made a deal with Coca-Cola to remove the sugar Coke and put nothing but Diet Coke in all the schools. And that means that it'll destroy the brains of even grammar school students. And I actually sent him the report for school, and I said, "Look, I came 10,000 miles to help you people at least read this report by the world experts." He admitted then that it should not be used for children, but he didn't do anything about it. And then the new health minister came in, and they are working frantically. There's a wonderful lady in Parliament, Sue Kedgley, who has really helped, and Abby Cormack, who is the actress who almost died on it, was almost diagnosed with bipolar, which was the reason that when I went over there, and they recently just submitted a petition with 8,000 names. So you can see the efforts around the world and the problems that we have, although we will not give up, and it's nice that we now have another environmental group that's going to team up with us and help us around the world.
Isn't it amazing? It's not just with aspartame, how so many things are out there to benefit big corporations and just take advantage of people, hurt people, squeeze people, make money without any thought of doing something that could hurt someone.
And without any recourse, unless the people, turn around and mount massive suits against them, like the tobacco suits. I'm inspired. I've always been inspired by that. Tom Udall here in New Mexico was the attorney general then, and he was one of the four or five attorneys general that carried the ball. And, of course, many of them resisted at first, but, hey, then it ultimately resulted in, several $100 billion judgment. Well, tobacco is just as bad as aspartame is just as bad, and maybe the judgments would be much bigger. But, so far we haven't gotten any attorneys general to take this on, although
no.
they make nice noises about it and how much they appreciate hearing from you. And New Mexico's is very disappointing to me because he's a PhD in chemistry. This Gary King, his dad was a three-term New Mexico governor and, a real populist. And so far he hasn't taken it on at all. And Betty even flew from Georgia to New Mexico and actually sat down and talked with him for half an hour. And what did he tell you? If he had the evidence, he would
move
forward?
Yes, he said that if he had the evidence that it could be shown that since aspartame was approved, that autism had skyrocketed, and he could see those statistics, that he would help. And Dr. Stoller, who's a pediatrician and who lectures on NutraSweet and autism, and in fact, we were hoping to get him on the show tonight too, actually showed him all those statistics, and still nothing has been done because it's even in the medical text. We've got aspartame disease, an ignored epidemic, which is a 1,000-page medical text, and Dr. Blaylock's book, Excitotoxins, talking about the birth defects and the autism. And if you get on mpwhi.com, you will see the famed Dr. Oney's 49-page report to the Board of Inquiry, and the Board of Inquiry report itself revoking the petition for approval, explaining what it was going to do to the brains of our children. So you see, it's and yet nothing is done with all that evidence. Dr. Elsis testified from Emory, he's professor of genetics, that it's a teratogen and causes, mental retardation and a neurotoxin. And what happened was they took these researchers and physicians who testified to Congress and put them on a yacht and tried to change their mind. And that's in the 8-month investigation by UPI. And we have that on web. Shows you how far, that they went.
And Jeannie Searle, now part of Pfizer, and I assume they're still pumping this out, right?
Well,
the patent got sold to Monsanto, and then Monsanto sold it to Ajinomoto of Japan. And Ajinomoto is also the world's largest manufacturer, not only of aspartame, but of another neurotoxin, monosodium glutamate. And
oh, God, MSG?
The head of Ajinomoto is actually a veterinarian who seems to have some kind of congenital indifference to what it does to
people.
Oh,
my gosh. Stephen, thanks for being on the show. We'll be joined by Ralph Walton, Dr. Ralph Walton, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Ralph Walton, a leading psychiatrist in the world who understands aspartame. Dr. Walton has been involved in the study of aspartame since 1985, when aspartame was first introduced to the world. He's currently in practice in Pennsylvania. Here he is now on Coast to Coast. Hello, Ralph. How are you, doctor?
Very good. Very good. How are you?
Good. And Betty, you're still with us?
Yes.
Super. Well, tell us, how did you get involved with this, with the study of aspartame?
Well, I became involved really just because of the experiences of one of my patients. I was taking care of a 55-year-old woman who suddenly had a grand mal seizure and a subsequent manic episode. And just doing some detective work, trying to figure out why a woman would have a first-onset seizure at this point in life and then a manic episode, the only change in her life was that she decided that she was a little too heavy and substituted Crystal Light, which was an aspartame product, for the sugar that she usually used to sweeten her iced tea. And it made sense on a chemical basis, so I wrote a paper on it. That's how it began. This was a little over 20 years ago, 1985, that paper was published.
And Betty, tell me your involvement with Dr. Walton.
Well, Dr. Walton writes the information having to do with the psychiatric problems and has helped us tremendously because most people have no idea that aspartame is the culprit. And I got in touch with him originally after finding out that he had actually done a study on aspartame himself. And also later on when 60 Minutes did a big show when Dr. John Oney made world news on the Aspartame Brain Tumor
Yes.
Association, Dr. Walton did the research on scientific peer-reviewed studies and funding for 60 Minutes. So he's contributed a tremendous amount to the anti-aspartame program as far as helping, you know, people understand what it does.
Tell me how 60 Minutes contacted you, Dr. Walton, and then some of the work you did for them.
Okay. I was contacted by one of the producers of 60 Minutes, and he contacted me because I'd published a double-blind study on aspartame. You know, my first paper was just a case report, and people criticized that as being just anecdotal, and that a double-blind study really was the standard that should be used. So I did such a study, and as a result of that, the publication of that study in Biological Psychiatry, my name was out there, and the producer contacted me, said that Mike Wallace was doing a story, and I actually worked with the producer and with Mike Wallace for about a year before that study went, before that story went on the air. And what Betty is referring to is the fact that at one point Mike Wallace challenged me, stating, "Doctor, you claim that aspartame is a problem," he said, "yet so much of the research, basically all of the research, attests to its safety. How do you explain that?" And I pointed out to Mike that virtually all of the studies that attested to safety were funded by the industry. And the independently funded studies invariably identified one or more problems. He challenged me to prove that, so I prepared a chart where I looked at all of the studies that had some relevance for human safety with regard to aspartame and divided it up into funding sources. And indeed, the correlation was perfect. That is that all of the studies that said it was safe were funded one way, either directly or indirectly, by the industry. And the studies that did not have any industry funding always found a problem with it.
How could these people who are doing the research for the industry-funded projects, did any of them, do you think, Dr. Walton, say, you know what, this stuff's not good, it's not going the right way? I mean, they must have known what was going on.
Sure. Yeah, I think they must have known. Because, you know, when you look carefully at the studies, those that are not fraudulent, and I found quite a few that had to be fraudulent, but when you look carefully at the studies, many of them are set up in such a way that you can predict ahead of time that you won't identify the problem. For example, we know that aspartame really is a very, very potent migraine trigger. Many people who are prone to migraines will have migraines after taking aspartame. But we know that typically you've got to take it for, well, over 3 or 4 days. Not everybody, but many, many people have to have it for several days running before they'll have a migraine. Others are a little more sensitive. But, you know, the study that said it doesn't cause migraines was done with just a 3-day administration of aspartame, which they knew was below the threshold for many people. So many of the studies have that sort of a setup, where it can be designed in such a way that you predict ahead of time that you're not going to identify the problem.
I love the Rowan study. The Rowan study on seizures, you know, they're so afraid that people are going to have seizures. It's 5 times on the FDA report of 92 symptoms that what they did out of 18 subjects, they gave 15 anti-seizure medications so they wouldn't have a seizure, and then used one capsule of aspartame for a one-day study.
It's absolutely amazing how these studies were set up. And as I said, some of the studies really have to have been fraudulent, because I identified in the work that I did for Mike Wallace, I identified some studies which supposedly were very, very separate studies where exactly the same numbers in the data appeared out of the fourth and fifth digit, and supposedly very, very separate studies. And there's no way that can happen. So clearly, I think one has to look with great suspicion at many of these studies.
Dr. Walton, you looked at also the alarming increase that our children are going through right now in terms of obesity, type 2 diabetes, and other difficulties, behavioral difficulties as well. Do you think aspartame has a contributing factor to these?
I'm convinced that it is. Obviously, you know, obesity, the current epidemic of obesity in our children, the metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, et cetera. There are multiple determinants for this. Our culture has changed. Children get less exercise. They spend more time in front of video games and televisions than previous generations, et cetera. So there are many, many factors. But I'm convinced that one important factor in the obesity epidemic is the use of the ever-increasing use of aspartame, because it, paradoxically, it will actually increase appetite, so that people who are taking it to lose weight will have exactly the opposite result from what they expect and what they want. They'll eat more. They'll have particularly that'll develop a carbohydrate craving. So it is really counterproductive, and I'm convinced that it, aside from increasing the weight, which increases type 2 diabetes, is also a more direct effect in increasing the incidence of diabetes.
Benny, this is frightening, and I hope tonight, as we reach out over 500 stations and on satellite radio and computers around the world, I hope some people in the authority positions wake up and start saying, you know what, I didn't realize it was as bad as they say. And at least they start checking into this.
Well, you know, this has been done, but unfortunately, the industry is very clever, very resourceful, has a great deal of funding, and always manages to convince legislators and others that it's perfectly safe, that there's this huge, voluminous amount of research attesting to its safety. It's been very frustrating. So I think that people need to be involved. And indeed, you know, this is the most complained about product. The FDA receives more complaints
yes.
about aspartame than any other product.
Dr. Walton, why haven't they gotten to you? Why haven't they been able to get you to join them?
I'm a physician. I take care of patients. I want to do what's right.
You took the oath.
That's right.
Some forget that, though.
Unfortunately.
Where does this go from here, Betty?
Well, one of the things I would like Dr. Walton to discuss is the Ramazzini studies that were done in 2005 and what they did to rebut that, because now they have confirmed what the FDA knew from the beginning, is that aspartame is a multi-potential carcinogen. It's absolutely illegal. And it's an incredible story. Would you like to talk about
that? Yeah, you know, I didn't do research on this, but Sofridi did send me some of his data. When I went to England, they asked, he was initially going to come also to testify before Parliament. They did ask me to look at their data, and I did so, but I didn't, I want to make clear, I didn't do any of the research. I was not involved in any of the research. But it is very, very impressive research demonstrating that, indeed, as Betty says, aspartame is clearly a carcinogen. You know, this is what John Olney has been saying for many years. He and I were on 60 Minutes, and that was his research. It was sort of a last-minute thing. Initially, they were going to focus on some of my research, but then this more dramatic research was produced by John Olney, correlating aspartame with brain tumors. And the Sofridi study done with rats to demonstrate that, indeed, as we just have been saying, this is carcinogenic.
And this was peer-reviewed by seven world experts.
This is a very, very reputable medical institute. This was done with thousands of laboratory animals. It is very impressive research, and it demonstrates, as I said, that this substance is carcinogenic.
And also, what I think is so interesting, for a little bit of humor, the European Food Safety Authority comes out and says, because, you know, they were rebutting it, and they said, well, you know, the rats had respiratory disease. And Dr. Siffredi came back and he says, but respiratory disease is the dying process, and this was for the lifetime of the rats. And then finally, when we exposed all this, then the head of the European Food Safety Authority, one of the doctors, Dr. Cole, wrote a press release and said, well, we were pressured by industry to hijack science. So even with that confession, nothing was ever done in Europe, although 47 members of parliament did sign for a ban when Dr. Walton went over and testified.
I'm fascinated, Dr. Walton, how this breaks down and turns into formaldehyde.
Yeah.
The rats actually turn, their hair turn yellow from the formaldehyde in that study.
You know, the amounts are small, as the industry says, but the problem is that we lack the capacity to eliminate it, so it is cumulative.
Well, exactly. I mean, they don't understand that if, you know, you may have little amounts of it from a soda or something else, but over time
it accumulates. Yeah, we lack the ability to eliminate formaldehyde.
And, you know, where does it hit people the most, do you think? I mean, does it affect their kidneys, their liver, the retina of the eye?
Well, I think that it affects multiple organ systems. Yes, clearly, you know, my research involved the central nervous system, the seizures, behavioral changes, et cetera. But in the double-blind study that we did, people did experience a whole range of adverse effects, as I said, from headaches, depressive and panic symptoms. I believe that it does, but not that it causes panic disorder, et cetera, but it makes vulnerable people feel much, much worse. So there are a whole host of neuropsychiatric problems induced by aspartame. We're talking about it's a carcinogenic substance. Two of the people in my double-blind study developed serious eye problems, and this is something I still feel absolutely terrible about, is that the administrator of our hospital was good enough to become a subject in the study. He was at the time a very, very healthy 43-year-old PhD psychologist, and he developed a retinal detachment, an eye emergency, and he permanently lost the sight in one eye as a result of participating in our study.
Is there anybody within the FDA, Dr. Walton, or you, Betty, who is pushing this to get reviewed and possibly, you know, taken out of the American
products? Many years ago, I did communicate with somebody in the FDA who seemed, I can't even remember her name now, it was a woman physician in the FDA that I was communicating with, and she seemed very, very interested and very eager to be helpful. And then all of a sudden, she wasn't there anymore. I couldn't find her. It was very strange.
Yes, and it show you how they don't want to have anything to do with it now. You know, they have laws. I wrote a citizen's petition to ban it. The law states they must answer in 180 days. Well, it's been 6 years, and they won't answer it. And the reason is that I used their own words about how bad it was, so they can't come up with an answer. So then I filed an amendment on an imminent health hazard, which means they must answer within a week and 10 days, sent certified mail, and they won't answer that. They serve so above the law that they simply won't touch it. Occasionally, like a woman who had a child with a seizure, just really gave it to the FDA in Florida. And finally, he says, well, we tried to tell you, everyone many years ago, and nobody listened, so it's not our fault.
Why aren't they using the non-caloric herb stevia instead of this?
Well, here's something interesting about stevia. You know, has no additives, you know, it's perfectly safe and a very good product. But, for instance, in Brazil, they add aspartame to it.
No.
Yes. And so now everybody was so happy that that Coca-Cola was going to come around and use stevia. They got this deal with Cargill, but it's not stevia, really. It's now been manipulated or genetically engineered. It's got a new name. And this is the reason why when I met Mike Silver, who was the CEO of Just Like Sugar, today, you know, he made herbs from the Amazon. I said, you know, there's nothing there that's safe for anybody. So that's when he made Just Like Sugar. He says it's so easy. Anybody could have made a safe sweetener. They did not have to use, you know, these chemicals and poisons. And so he made it out of chicory and orange peel. So, you know, there's no excuse for all this. And if they would just leave stevia alone, you know, if it was just
stevia.
Green leaf the way that it is and don't put additives in, it's absolutely...
It would be fine.
Yeah.
All right. Now, when people buy it on the market and they use it, and they are now, is aspartame added to that or should they read the labels? What's in there?
Well, aspartame is not added to it in the United States that I know of, but we have a Mission Possible Brazil, and they told me, you know, because I was writing about it, they said, down here we've got aspartame in it. We verified that. So I tell people, you know, just, you know, you got to read labels these days. First of all, you know, you get something with aspartame in it. It's got MSG, which has a synergistic and additive effect. And you've got all these color dyes and everything else. I tell victims, look, if you want to be safe, it's like Dr. Roberts says, when in doubt, throw it out. Stay away from processed foods. So much is hidden in there that aspartame victims are chemically hypersensitive, and so they think they're allergic to things. But like Dr. Blaylock says, he said, understand the reactions. They're not allergic. They're toxic like arsenic and cyanide. We're talking about a poison.
If you had your wish list, Dr. Walton, what would you like to happen here?
Oh, I'd like to. First, years ago, I said that people just needed to be educated and informed. Now I believe that it is so hazardous, it needs to be banned.
Totally.
Totally.
Immediately?
Yeah.
In fact, I was talking to Dr. Deagle one day, and he told me, he says, you know, depleted uranium is the most poisonous thing, but he said aspartame is worse because of its ubiquitous nature in foods. It's in everything. It's in prescription drugs. It's in the very drugs used to treat the problems. Somebody has a headache on aspartame. They go to a doctor. They put them on Maltex. It has aspartame in it. You remember me saying about how aspartame interacts with L-DOPA, so they make Parcopa and put aspartame in it.
Now, can one go online and search aspartame/drugs to see what drugs have aspartame? A lot of people are on different kind of pharmaceuticals. They probably want to know.
Well, yes. Actually, I think if you call, I know I did, the health department and ask them for a list of them, they usually will help you. Otherwise, you've got to know the drug. You have to look at each drug in order to see if it's in it.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment with more on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls with Dr. Betty Martini in just a moment, but first, Dr. H.J. Roberts, a world expert on aspartame, and he has testified before Congress in 1984, selected as the best doctor in the United States, and he wrote, kindly dedicated to me, the medical text, Aspartame Disease, an Ignored Epidemic. He is a diabetic specialist. He's now in his 80s and still writing, having completed the manifesto. He has written several books and has many tapes on aspartame. He's one of the few and the one who coined the term aspartame disease. Here he is, Dr. Roberts. Dr. Roberts, how are you, sir?
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Now, tell me, how did you get involved in looking at aspartame?
Well, it all evolved from the trenches of my medical and consultation practice. The aspartame was first approved in July of 1981. And since I am an endocrinologist and see people who have to abstain from sugar, diabetics, people with hypoglycemia, and so forth, it was something that they enjoyed taking that had no sugar, no cholesterol, no sodium, and it seemed great. And so I was initially very pleased with it. But then over the next several months or year or so, I kept seeing problems that I had not previously encountered. And through a lot of observation and the input of some very wise patients and some laboratory studies that we did, it all seemed to focus upon the aspartame, the chemical, which was put in first as a tabletop sweetener, and then in 1983 in soft drinks, over the violent objections, incidentally, of the soft drink industry. And it evolved from there. I was extremely critical of my thoughts, saying, well, maybe all this is just coincidence. But as case after case piled up into the hundreds and then over the thousands, it was obvious that this was a real entity.
Did it seem to you, Dr. Roberts, that it was accumulation effect of aspartame that was helping to cause this problem? That someone, let's say, who had never ingested it before maybe would never show symptoms, but if you had been drinking or eating or ingesting something with aspartame over years, you'd begin to see some symptoms?
All the above.
Ah.
I mean, some people from the first time they took it would experience, for instance, a convulsion. And others, it was cumulative. It took time for them to become, quote, allergic to it or sensitive to it. And the it was either the aspartame itself, which is a chemical, or its various components, which you probably know about. And this has been 25 years of my research.
In some pharmaceutical drugs, of course, you know, they'll give us the symptoms of possible side effects. And it affects some people that way. You know, they might get a racy heartbeat or whatever, whatever the particular symptom is for the particular drug they're taking. But it doesn't happen to everybody, but some people get it. With aspartame, is the percent much higher in terms of people who are going to have effects, who are going to get sick?
Well, it's incorporated in many medications, especially for children, you know, so-called patient-friendly. And they can have problems right from the very beginning or after they've taken it a while. And there's every variation of it. It's a complex problem that confronts physicians and patients and, of course, manufacturers and, of course, the FDA. Because this is this aspartame disease is widespread. And it's been promoted by a number of powerful economic and political and professional interests.
Dr. Roberts, would you go into sudden cardiac death, you know, the athletes, you know,
Betty,
dropping
it's
dead?
It's so nice chatting with you.
Yeah, she's been hanging on all night.
Betty Martini.
Yes. I wanted you to
you know, I got a 3, I was supposed to get a 3 a.m. call. But this 3 a.m. call was not for me, it was for the nation, for all Americans.
That's right.
This 3 a.m. call. And it's about a lost medical and public health compass. You know, everybody's, you know, realize we've lost our moral compass, but we've also lost our public health compass. And this is just one part of this whole phenomenon, as you know, Betty, dear.
I wonder if you would, you know.
It leads to what I call, you know, the bees is called the people collapse syndrome. You know, the bees?
Yep. They're disappearing.
Yeah, you know, and we should not be too complacent about this because it's a cumulative thing with many other factors.
Absolutely.
In my book last year, it was called Protecting Mankind. And there are many other aspects with our toxins and the fluoride and all the other things we're doing, the cholesterol phobia, the fear of cholesterol and the fear of fat and so forth and so on, George.
Could you tell them about sudden cardiac death? I know that you were Pilcher's dad, and you're in West Palm Beach where he died, and about Diane Fleming, who's in prison, whose husband was an athlete, and we still haven't gotten her out. She's in the movie Sweet Misery, A Poison World.
What happened there?
Well, her her husband was very athletic, played basketball, and he drank Diet Pop all day long. He took Metrex, all different products with aspartame. And for years, and she tried to prevent it. She's a little Sunday school teacher. And finally, one day, he takes three times the amount of creatine. You have to remember that aspartame interacts not only with drugs, but
with supplements and vitamins, I guess.
Well, with creatine and this type of thing. And so he died of methanol poisoning, and they couldn't figure out where the methanol came from, so they told Diane to call the police, and she did, and told him the last thing, you know, that he drank. She took three lie detector tests and passed.
Oh, my God.
And they put her in prison for 20 and 30 years in the sweet misery of poison world. And of course, what happens with this methanol is, first of all, it converts to formaldehyde in the liver, but it shoots back, as Dr. Bowen said, in the bloodstream. And then a toxicologic report was done showing that the last thing that he drank, the three times the amount of creatine, actually caused his death. And so here she's been in prison over 5 years, and Dr. Roberts offered to talk to the medical examiner who kept, you know, time after time canceling it. And finally, when she went to the meeting, just for a conference call with Dr. Roberts, she refused to talk to him. And I believe because she knew that, you know, what had happened to this man. And meanwhile, Diane Fleming is still in prison.
Any way of getting her out?
Well, several doctors have written affidavits after looking at the autopsy, but, you know, she's in Virginia, and there's no parole, and she's on the last appeal. They've turned down an evidentiary hearing where they could bring up the toxicological report, and we're running out of ideas.
And, Dr. Roberts, I want to thank you just on behalf of the human race for the work you've done in this area.
Thank you.
Because we need great medical practitioners like yourself, tremendous doctors who step forward and have the guts to do it and say this is wrong and this is hurting people.
Well, he wrote the medical text, and I think, you know, if doctors don't have it, they have no earthly idea how to treat these problems. There was a walk-in clinic, and I took some information up to this doctor, and he bought all Dr. Roberts' books, and, you know, a year later he said that that 80% of the walk-in people into that clinic were aspartame-related, and it was because he had Dr. Roberts' medical text that he knew how to, you know, diagnose them. Otherwise, if somebody came in with a seizure, they'd give them anti-seizure medication, and if they were on aspartame, it would interact.
We need more people like him. Betty, stand by. We're going to be back with you and some questions now on Coast to Coast AM. And here's the portion where we interact with you. Dr. Betty Martini is still with us, and we're going to take your phone calls. Let's go east of the Rockies. Vicki in St. Louis. Hey, Vicki.
Hey, George. Hi.
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Good. Good talking to you. Keep up the good work, Betty. Doing great work.
Thank you.
I became aware of aspartame problems years ago listening to George's show. We had him here in St. Louis earlier than everybody else. And I started noticing, I want to tell everyone, that the gums, all the chewing gums, you noticed about 4 years ago, they started saying new, longer-lasting flavor.
Yep. And
well, I'd like to tell you about gums because it's one of the most serious products there is. In fact, Dr. Roberts wrote a paper about it and said, because it's buccal, it works like nitroglycerin under the tongue because it's really a drug and goes straight to the brain. So it's caused a lot of grand mal seizures on a stick of sugar-free gum.
Well, gum now has it, even not the sugar-free ones, every gum.
Well, what I was going to tell you was in 2004, Wrigley's had suit pressed against them because they were told and they were told and they were told. And even though they got out of it, they very arrogantly turned around and put aspartame in all their gums but two. This is the reason that I went to New Zealand. Abby Cormack almost died from chewing Wrigley's gum and was about to be diagnosed with bipolar. They thought she had MS. And as soon as she got off of it, she was okay. But now it's in so many gums that people have to be warned.
In fact, I
mentioned to Just Like Sugar people, I said, listen, next you got to have gum. This stuff is killing people. And he said that they would have it before the end of the year, thank goodness, because kids are using it. It's in Orbit. It's in just, it's very
almost
hard.
Every gum.
Anything that does not have aspartame in it, and it's many times mixed with sucralose or Splenda and a sulfine potassium, which cause cancer and leukemia in original studies, so they mix the poisons. So people should be warned to look at what's in gum.
Betty,
glad you brought that up.
Betty, one other question.
Mm-hmm.
Xylitol, that's the gum that I use with xylitol now.
Uh-huh.
Is that a safe sweetener?
Well, actually, if you just use a small amount, it's okay, but it's a sugar alcohol, and so if you use too much, you get bloating and cramps and diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
So, until we can get something better on the market, if you don't use too much of it, it shouldn't hurt you.
All right. Thank you, Betty.
Thanks, Vicki. Time to go back to just bazooka bubblegum, Betty. Remember those days?
Well, I think that's cut it in it, too. You might check.
I'm going to check everything. You know,
I know. I heard somebody wrote me about it, and I said I'll check that out.
I keep a roll of gum in my car, and I'm going to check that now, too. I mean, I never even thought about that.
Well,
but
here's the problem. You know, people use Juicy Fruit for years and years and years. And it
wasn't in it, right?
Right, it wasn't in it. And then they never thought to look at the label because they'd been using it so many years. And then a man called me from North Dakota and said that he got dizzy and almost went off the cliff because they had put it in Juicy Fruit gum.
So it is the old gums, then, from way back, they're using it now, too, you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And we alert everybody that, you know, to look. And now, interestingly, Wrigley's must have been getting a lot of heat because they just sold Mars.
Yeah.
And I told them, I said, your funeral.
They sold to Mars or they went to Mars?
They Wrigley's was sold to Mars.
Let's go to Connecticut. Philip, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Philip.
Hi. You guys really scared the bejesus out of me.
I hope we've all learned something.
Well, you know, I 2 weeks ago I heard about this on the discussion, but prior to that I was drinking about 2 liters of Diet Coke per day since 1994.
Two liters a day.
Let me tell you something.
And how did you feel? Let's find out how you felt, Betty.
Actually, I to be honest with you, I have no knowledge of any difference. And during that time, I had lost weight, gained weight, been on supplements, been off of supplements, gone back, gained weight back.
Did you feel overall pretty good?
At the time that, that would have been 2002, I would say.
Are you still drinking this much?
No, I'm not. 2 weeks ago, I quit. I stopped it altogether.
And do you feel any better?
No.
All right, Betty, what's wrong? How come he's not feeling any better?
Well, actually, as soon as you get off of it, and people need to know this, is that because menthol is classified as narcotic, usually the symptoms get a little worse to begin with because they go through withdrawal. So Dr. Blaylock wrote us a detox program called What to Do If You've Used Aspartame.
Yeah.
And we have an aspartame information list where you can get on at mpwhi.com or wnho.net. And then we can help you from there. For instance, he says you have to take magnesium the rest of your life to protect the heart and the brain from excitotoxins. And the thing of it is, if you've used it that long, many times you become very numb to it, and then all of a sudden you get off of it and you feel a little worse, and then You know, you get about 6 weeks down the line and you feel better. But, you know, it varies because some people have been on it a long time. They poison themselves not overnight, and it takes longer. And in other times, people get right off of it and feel fine, like Abby did in New Zealand. So I really would like to talk to you online so that we can help you. And I can get that detox formula to you.
Great.
Because Dr. Roberts and Dr. Blaylock said you need to flush out your body with distilled water. And you may feel bad for a while, but it will ease up.
Do you know if it's in mouthwash and toothpaste and things like that?
Yes, and sometimes it may be in by the number 951, which is the E number in Europe. And, for instance, and also aspartame interacts with fluoride, because fluoride's
That's another junk they put into it.
Yes. So, for instance, I buy my toothpaste at a health food store, and I make sure fluoride's not in there and no artificial sweetener. You couldn't get me to buy toothpaste
at
a grocery store.
Any countries banned aspartame?
Well, countries are trying. The big problem that we have now is Codex, and there have been efforts to try to get Codex to ban it, because if they don't, that means that countries that didn't even know about it, maybe small countries that, you know, it would be
third world, underdeveloped,
right, that they could be using it. There was a time when countries did use it, but certain countries. But now it's in over at least 100 countries of the world. So some don't use it as much as others. But when I was in the UK, I mean, it was absolutely everywhere. And the first time they didn't know I was coming, and it was in the newspapers, and they really found out. The second time I was over there, I got off the plane, and immigration said, follow me, and confiscated everything on aspartame and said, if we allow you in England, how many people are going to find out about the dangers of aspartame?
Betty, stay with us. We're going to come right back. We're going to take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. So, Betty, I just went online during the break and looked up my favorite gum, Juicy Fruit, to see what was in it. So here we are. I'll have you explain some of it, okay?
Okay.
Sugar, we know what that is. Gum base, what's that? Do you know?
Well, it's just an additive. It's whatever it's made out of different things. I wouldn't exactly, I'd have to look at it.
Okay. Corn syrup, we know what that is. Not too great, but it's in it. Dextrose.
Well, dextrose is sugar.
Sugar, another part of natural and artificial flavors.
That's what you got to be warned about, because that's where they had MSG and aspartame.
All right. Glycerol?
Glycerin?
Is, well, it's G-L-Y-C-E-R-O-L, glycerol.
Yeah, well.
Softeners, and then they put it right out here, aspartame.
Aspartame,
it's
yeah.
in there.
That's
and then awesome. They have something called BHT to maintain freshness.
Well, these preservatives are also kind of serious. There's one of them that they're taking out, bends away, because you mix that with vitamin C and it becomes carcinogen. So that's why I say that if you can't tell people, if you can't pronounce the ingredients and you don't know what they are, don't use them. Liverpool did a study showing the combination of the dyes and the MSG and the aspartame and how it stopped nerves from growing. It's real serious.
Why don't they get back to natural? All right. Sugar's not great for you. Processed sugar's not great for you. Cane sugar's okay. You know, minimal sugar is the way you should go anyway. I think that's one of the problems with our little kids these days. I think they're all sugar junkies, and they get whacked out on this. Why can't they go back to natural ingredients and make product?
They can. They can. But, you know, in every case, there is a reason that they do this. In the case of aspartame, it's addictive, and it's too much of a cash cow. As a waitress once said, if you take three people who are drinking Diet Coke and three people who are drinking regular Coke, then the people drinking Diet Coke will order three to one to the people on something else.
But if people started saying to these companies, by virtue of not buying their products, I'm not going to drink this stuff anymore. I'm not going to chew this stuff anymore. I'm not going to eat this anymore. Do you think they'd wake up?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. I always tell people that, you know, if you don't buy it, they can't sell it. And a very good example of that is our Mission Possible Falkland Islands, is that he didn't want to wait for a ban. He sat down and wrote every single person in the Falkland Islands an aspartame product right on the shelves now. And we tell people to, you know, to boycott companies. Hershey's now has Neotane. That's another aspartame product. And it took them a long time to get that approved. And we objected and objected. You want to do this all over again? So they're putting more and more of these chemicals. These chemicals interact. And we tell them, boycott it. Boycott it. I stopped. I live in the home of Coca-Cola. And I stopped drinking this when I read the protest of the National Soft Drink Association. They're now American Beverage. And they simply, you know, told about how bad this is, and then they turned around and put it in their product, and that's the reason it was put in the congressional record. Well, I wouldn't want them to have one penny of profit for having known what aspartame was and putting it in there anyway. So that's the reason that we've asked people to boycott many different things. And what worries me are products, for instance, like yogurt, because the head of the National Yogurt Association has petitioned the FDA twice to allow it in yogurt unlabeled, which is against the law. And in as much as the FDA won't answer as to whether they did, I tell people, if you're going to use yogurt, use organic yogurt. So it's our food supply is really very serious, you know. And the aspartame victims are reacting, for instance, to genetically engineered food.
Well, so many people are coming down with so many different ailments, and nobody really can pinpoint what's happening, other than I'm convinced it's the environment and it's what you eat. And, you know, you could probably include things like this. And, you know, over how many years have people been getting fatter and worse and, you know, sicker?
Well, I'll tell you something. You know, about 10 years ago, an email went around the world. Front groups tried to say it was a big hoax on aspartame. I had lectured for the World Environmental Conference, and then somebody by the name of Nancy Barkle disorganized it a bit, put her name on it, and it was put on 450 global networks, made world news. And I was actually on a list of neurologists and explaining that I'd lectured and there was an epidemic of MS and lupus and that this was due to aspartame and all the things it caused. And I want you to know my phone rang off the hook for at least a couple of years, first year every 2 minutes, with people with all these different ailments and who got off of it. And, you know, they were walking out of wheelchairs with MS, like Corey Brackett, who made Sweet Misery. People with joint pain or fibromyalgia, that they didn't even know what that was, which is hardening of the synovial fluids by aspartame and the toxic breakdown products, could walk again. People that were blind could see again because the doctor that's here in Atlanta who testified for Congress had said if vision was in the wet stage, that their vision was returning, and people's vision would return.
Amazing.
It was just incredible the things that aspartame causes that people have no way of knowing until they get off of it.
Let's go to final calls. Bob in Illinois, you're on the air with Dr. Betty Martini. Hi, Bob.
George, thanks, George.
Sure.
And hello, Betty. Doctor, I'd like to know, can you name a safe sugar substitute on the market?
Yes, I was mentioning, just like sugar, that one is perfectly safe for diabetics because chicory has been used for 70 years to improve the health of diabetics. And as I said, it was made some years ago when I mentioned to Mike Silver, who was making herbs from the Amazon, that we needed something safe, that there was surely somebody could make a safe sweetener. So he made it. fact, he was on Heartbeat of America with William Shatner telling the story, and got an award for making the safe sweetener, and now it's in Whole Foods, and you can get it online at just like sugarinc.com. And he's making drinks and things that are absolutely safe. So there is a safe sweetener, for instance, a pure stevia safe, but it says a dietary supplement. You know, FDA has not approved it as a sweetener, and they give it give them a terrible time. But this is one that is FDA approved, can be put in food, and you can bake with it. And since we've told people about it and put it on the list, you know, people are, you know, not having any problems. Diabetics are not having any problems. And Dr. Blaylock, Russell Blaylock, wrote in his newsletter, finally, a safe sweetener. He asked that it be analyzed to make sure there were no additives. And it was just, chicory, orange peel, vitamin C, and calcium.
I see. And what about going after these people, suing these people, class action lawsuits?
Well, there are attorneys in New York who are taking the case histories on the brain tumors, but only in New York and New Jersey, although other attorneys do call from time to time. And, you know, the only problem that we're having is what they're trying to do is to prevent litigation now. There's even been a press release how they don't want to put warnings on drugs because they'll be sued. They want to give FDA preemption, and they really can't do that because the Bill of Rights says, I think it's 9 and 10, that you cannot take away the rights of the people, you know, and the rights of the state.
What's the best sugar to use if you're going to use sugar? Cane sugar?
I would say raw sugar. That's
unbleached or whatever they do.
It's brown and tastes better. And then white refined sugar that can cause, you know, degenerative diseases if you use too much of it. But, you know, people grew up with sugar. It was when aspartame was put on the market that we began this epidemic of obesity. And also you got MSG on the market, which also causes obesity. So you have this problem. But basically, aspartame caused one of the biggest epidemics of obesity in the world. Everybody wonders why, and they take more chemicals. And all it does is, you know, add to the obesity.
All right, next up, let's go to Steve in Palmdale, California. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? Interesting show. This is really some scary stuff. You know, I have a 22-year-old daughter who's been having these really wild seizures, and she's been to the hospital a couple of times recently, and they can't figure out what's going on. They have no idea. They've looked for tumors and done all this stuff, and they don't have an answer for her.
Does she use the aspartame?
I would think now, listening to you, I'm sure she's getting it somewhere.
Understand that one of the pivotal studies that approved aspartame was done on 7 infant monkeys, a 52-week oral toxicity study, and 7 had 5 had grand mal seizures and 1 dad, and they used that to approve aspartame, believe it or not. And aspartame interacts with anti-seizure medication, and now there is a great deal of publicity over the new Dilantin by Pfizer, and it's been reformulated, it's larger, and people are complaining of aspartame symptoms like the vision loss and glaucoma and sexual dysfunction. Aspartame causes male sexual dysfunction and ruins female response. And that's why we're so spammed with Viagra ads. But they're analyzing this, and there are attorneys involved in a suit. It's a federal suit, but it's in Hawaii. And I recently wrote a press release about it, and we're taking the cases of these people. But in Dr. Roberts' medical text, it says that aspartame interacts with Dilantin and like drugs. And one neurologist said that that he put a victim, actually a seizure victim, on every drug there was, and nothing worked. And one day he saw that she had a case of diet pop in the hospital, and he says, well, that's what it is, because Jeez. He knew. And got her off of it. She went crazy. They put her in a mental hospital, and a couple of weeks later, they got her out. She was fine, and the seizure stopped.
First-time caller, Eric, driving around in Wyoming. Go ahead, Eric.
My wife, 1 year now, but last year we got married, and she's 54 now. She's been drinking Diet Coke most of her life, most of her adult life, I could say. And as far as outward appearances, she doesn't have any seizures or anything like that. I guess she's been kind of conditioned to it over most of her life. But recently now, as she's gotten older, she's had some headaches. And every once in a great while, she's had, like, migraines. But not too recently. But most of what's going on recently right now is she has a thing on the inside of her ankle that gets swelling and painful and burning on the inside of her ankle. And she hasn't had that within the last year. So, and we've gone to a foot doctor who thinks it might be tendonitis, but I don't know. She's had this, she's had that, she's got the varicose veins. So I don't know if all this stuff is cumulative or if it might get worse or what kind of thing would that affect in, like, joint pain from aspartame or what?
Well, aspartame is a cumulative poison, and it's definitely a poison, and it does cause joint pain. It ravages every organ in the body. And just to give you an idea, looking at the FDA report, the first one is headaches, dizziness, change in mood quality, nausea, abdominal pain and cramps, change in vision, seizures, memory loss, fatigue, rash, sleep problems, hives, change in heart rate, grand mal seizures, swelling, difficulty in breathing, change in activity level, oral sensory changes in menstrual pattern, and it just goes on and on, localized pain and tenderness, coma, they blackout. I mean, there's so many different things, but nobody escapes aspartame. They need to get off of it. They do go through withdrawals. We do have a detox program by Dr. Blaylock. We have an aspartame information list on mpwhi.com where we will help people and answer their questions. There's medical books on it. That's one of the best things that a person could do, would get Dr. Roberts' 1,000-page medical text, because under each problem, he gives a mechanism for it and how and why it causes it, so that you could take it to your doctor and he could look through it and understand what was going on. It causes so many different things that, there's certain things we know that are notorious aspartame problems. Some of them are subtle. And so, as Dr. Roberts says, you just have to get them off of it. When their symptoms disappear, you know that's the problem.
Will in Tucson, Arizona. We'll squeeze you in here, Will. Go ahead.
Thank you, George and Betty, for taking my call. Uh-huh. Appreciate it very much. For years, we have been cautioning women to avoid alcohol products when pregnant because it can cause fetal abnormalities.
Yes.
I hear that aspartame breaks down into methyl alcohol, so women who are pregnant are drinking diet colas to avoid putting on weight when pregnant, and they're infusing their whole system, particularly even the fetal development, with methyl alcohol. Do you think that this might be any relationship, any causal relationship to the increase in autism?
Absolutely. It's in the doctor's medical books. And Dr. Lewis Elsis testified before Congress that the teratogen, which means it causes birth defects and mental retardation. And that's where all this ADD, ADHD is coming from. And even there was a study, even in the UK, where they said that additives cause behavioral problems, and all the big chains, incidentally, have removed aspartame, even ASDA, which is Walmart in the UK. And so, yes, that is the reason. But the worst thing is that there is no warning on the label for women to know that. They're not familiar with the ingredients in aspartame, and who would think that they would allow something that's classified as a narcotic, that is free methyl alcohol, in a product to begin with? So, I mean, there is so much literature. You can get on our website and just put in aspartame and birth defects and aspartame in children, or look at the report for schools. The ADD people, the Feingold people, have banned aspartame. Their report's in there. And that goes into everything, basically, that it does, you know, to the brains of children or to the fetus. And we have Dr. Oney's 49-page report that shows that it was prophesized, even before they put it on the market, that it would destroy the brains of our children.
Betty, thank you so much for being on the program and bringing all those other guests with you. Appreciate it. For Kara Scoburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.